The march moved from Selma to Montgomery. It was a jumble of a time. We'd already suffered one martyr, two actually. And the coordination of the march was not actually very smooth. You had hundreds of people, hundreds and hundreds of people who wanted to take place or wanted to participate on the march that was to take place, but only 300 were allowed. But those 300 made the journey in a few days, sleeping outside, people of all ages, people of all backgrounds. This was a truly ecumenical event. And I think sometimes we try to repeat that event, and like all things of that sort that are very powerful moments in our lives and we try to repeat them, you can't really do that. There's something about our nature as human beings living in the matter, world of matter, that makes it such that time seems to flow in one direction. And that's forward. You can't really go back. But you can repeat some things. Now, last month we learned that, in fact, the UU world was not a contiguous or single thought, which shouldn't surprise us, because that's the point. That's who we are. We hold it that each of us gets to be who we are, that we're not in a lockstep. And sometimes your neighbor is fun and easy to get along with, and sometimes they embarrass you. We learned that, in fact, we have in our principles the idea that we are open and accepting of all people. But what did we find out last month? Not necessarily so. In fact, not only were some people not willing to let people of color into their congregations, but some actually had some substantially white supremacist ideas. Members of our own denominations, two at the time. As well, we had differences between American Unitarians and Canadian and British Unitarians. The Canadians, though they're right here, our neighbors, who we think fondly of now, looked at those days and said, this isn't really our business. This is American business. The business of civil rights and the business of how we treat people of other racial backgrounds. And I say that, I put air quotes on that, because it's really questionable. It's highly questionable as to whether or not we are of separate races. The British and the Canadian UUs felt that the civil rights issue was an American matter. By the fall of 63, the UUA's Commission on Religion and Race conducted a survey of 46 Canadian member congregations. Only 9 responded. Some of the Canadian congregations, in fact, ordered their ministers who sought to answer Dr. King's call. And you will recall that what started the whole thing in Selma was Dr. Martin Luther King sent out a call to people of all religions, of all nationalities, to join and support this movement. But some of the American congregations as well would not allow their ministers to go, did not want to participate in this. They thought it was a little bit over the top. And the Canadians felt like this was an American thing. Out of 14 Unitarian ministers in Canada, 10 of them were U.S. Americans. And several of them were enjoined to not go. Now, eventually the Commonwealth would come around. The British UUs arrived at the realization that these British Isles, I quote, are not free from some of the dark problems of racial prejudice. This shift in the Commonwealth was probably accelerated because throughout the 60s, other religious liberals were being heard around the world, so it was already in motion. Some had been, though, more activated by apartheid, others by the treatment of Jews during World War II. And as I mentioned before, last month, World War II had a great deal to do with the civil rights movement, because we had entered into a war to free people and to stand for democracy and freedom, and then as we come back home, we painted ourselves into a corner. We had to go along with that idea. And that was probably one of the major factors that birthed civil rights. We don't really know, but it might have been one of the things that activated Rosa Parks. And as I said last month, without Rosa Parks, we probably wouldn't have a Martin Luther King. She's really the one who started it. Now, among the Canadians who responded to King's call and the bombings of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, there were Christians, there were Jews, there were UUs, there were people from all and any number of denominations and backgrounds. The memorials for James Reeb drew hundreds, even thousands. In Ottawa, 4,000 people, including 75 UUs. Now, you may think that sounds funny, 4,000 people and 75 UUs, but you really have to understand, in terms of world population, we're really not that big a deal. There's not that many of us. 4,000 people, including 75 UUs, marched on the U.S. Embassy. Thousands of more were to rally, and eventually this turned Canadian attention to investigate their own problems with the native people, the indigenous people. That included some of the, that included, I forget the name of it. It's not, it's this, the tribe that the Lakota belonged to. Dene, I think it's called the Dene. It's a larger group. And then the Inuit and Alouettes as well. They had a history in Canada of taking, of separating the children from the families, from the native families, and then taking them and placing them by adoption in white Euro families. And then they were raised with European standards, European education. They weren't allowed to speak their language. They weren't allowed to practice their native spiritual practices. So this business of taking people's children is not new to this continent. Canada had a history. Oh yeah, they had this. They had a history. So why did we here, even in the United States, suffer so much resistance? Why did we have so much resistance to the civil rights movement among UUs, is what I'm talking about here. Why did we have so much resistance? Well, there were a lot of reasons. Here's an interesting one. In Huntsville, Alabama, a congregation that had just been organized in 1958, so it was a pretty new congregation, many of those congregants were actually rocket scientists. They were NASA people. As you know, there's a large NASA community in Huntsville. Well, these people were under security clearances. They were actually kept, they had close tabs were kept on them by a number of different government agencies, a lot of federal agencies. So for them to get involved in this wouldn't mean an overnight trip to jail. It could have been very severe for them. Yet, many of them did, and the congregation, in fact, did vote to support the walk, and a number of people from that congregation were actually involved in it. So that was really sticking their necks out, because that's would have been the end of kind of the type of career that you donate your life to. And yet, they picked up the cause. The fact of the matter was is that some of the leaders in that congregation had been in civil rights from the very beginning. But when its first minister, Charles Blackburn, was arrested in Macomb and then marched in Selma, a dozen members resigned from that congregation. That took place in his first year as their minister. During a second year, 75 joined. Now, after Selma, the focus was immediately shifted. The SCLC, which was really the center of the organization of Selma and of so many civil rights movements across the country. You had organizations like the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was SNCC. You had the SCLC. You had what were some of the other organizations? That's right, CORE. CORE was one of them. CORE was very strong. CORE is strong in the North, too. What else? Who remembers? There was Urban League. There were just a number of these organizations, and then more to pick up after that. When they opened up in Chicago, because that's where Dr. King pointed to next, they moved from Montgomery, Selma and Montgomery, to Chicago. And they found that racism and resistance was just as recalcitrant there as it was in the South. Different game, but just as tough. They had redlining. By the way, to some extent, some of that still goes on to this day. Are you familiar with what redlining is? Yeah, everybody knows that. Good. Not quite everybody. Redlining was a way of it was a process of segregation. Sometimes there were these the government backed loans for housing. Okay, so if they wanted to, when you make loans on houses, one thing you want to make sure happens is you want to make sure you get your money back. Okay. So in order to get the money back, what the government decided to do was is they decided to stabilize different neighborhoods in different ways. So you could break a neighborhood, let's say an all-white neighborhood, by allowing one or two black families to move into that neighborhood. So what they did was is they wouldn't allow loans to be made to black families in any area of the city. You could only buy in certain areas of the city. Is this making sense now? That's right. That's right. That's right. So they would say the house had been sold, that it was no longer available. And at the same time, a white family could come along right behind that, and they would get that loan, and they would move into that house. I was looking at those maps, in fact, just last week, about a week ago, I was looking at those maps, and you could see they had green zones, and the green zones were, it was okay to have X number of families of color in those zones. But the fact that there were families of color in those zones made was called an undesirable trait in that neighborhood. And so when they listed what the positive points were in the neighborhood, things like, oh, there are parks here, the school systems is very good in this area and so forth. If there were one or two black families or Asian families in that area, then those were listed under the detriments to that area, some of the drawbacks to being in that area. You can still see these maps. They're around. Right. Those are different kinds of covenants. But they are covenants. They're not like ours, but similar in the purpose. Floors. Now, at the beginning of this morning, I raised a simple but effective method of determining direction of travel. We said that if we can plot our current location, and these things are not very far past us right now, and in fact, in some ways still exist, and you can tell by just driving around and looking a little bit. We said that if you could plot your location, that you could determine with reasonable certainty what your direction of movement is. Okay? Now, how many of you here receive the UU World? That's good. Okay. And also you can get a newsletter. We get newsletters from the region, from the Western region. All right? If you will tune into those, you'll begin to get some sense of beyond. This is a bubble within a bubble. You get that, right? Okay. And so sometimes it's tricky for us to understand, to look at ourselves and say, well, what is our real context? Because we don't get real feedback on what our context is, right? But maybe if you look at what's going on in some other places, you can at least find out what some of the other bubbles are doing. That'll give you an idea of where UUism is right now. Now, I'm going to have a few questions for you in a moment. And then, of course, we have our own communicator. But with these, you can begin to get some kind of a sense of look to the past and see what happened. See what happened when members of a congregation wouldn't even allow some members of their congregation to go to something like Selma. And that's Unitarians and Universalists, okay? What do you see now if you plot that movement? Where have we come from? Where are we headed? And so to kind of help you with this, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Ready? Okay. Who remembers what the I'm going to read them for you. Who can remember who were the three martyrs of Selma? We talked about this. Who were the three martyrs of Selma? James Reeb. Viola Liuzzo, good. And who? Okay, you're cheating. I don't want to hear from you. You just heard this earlier today. What did she say? What was it she said? Who was it? Jimmy Lee Jackson. Okay, James Lee Jackson. That's right. Now, in a lot of our documentation, for example, at Andover Harvard Library, up until recently, no mention is made of, guess who? Both, that's right, both Viola and Jimmy Lee. No mention was made of them in this as the three martyrs, as one, as the other two of the three martyrs of Selma. What do you suppose that's about?
Sexism and racism.
The fact of the matter is that many women were not allowed to go to Selma, to the march. Viola was, in fact, her husband pretty much insisted that she not go, and she went anyway, which is part of the reason that she is not mentioned in the Andover Harvard Library, or wasn't up until recently. That was because people were angry with her for going. They were sad that James Reeb had died. Thousands turned up for James Reeb. Very few people turned up for Viola Liuzzo. And Jimmy Lee Jackson was actually mentioned in the memorial services in Selma and in Montgomery and in the ones that's a few of the ones in the immediate area that's up that followed the march. But that's another, it's only been until recently that they've actually been entered into record. Okay, we talked about this already a little bit this morning. What were the denomination's historical views on civil rights? Do you remember this? Split, that's right. Not one way or the other. There was tremendous split on this. Some of the it wasn't one of the denominations or the other. Both denominations split. Now, okay, you know about the, let's do the next slide. Okay, what is the current level of involvement by people of color in a Unitarian Universalist denomination? Small, would you say it's, is it disproportionately small?
Yes.
Okay. What are our current concerns around that? And like, in other words, are we thinking we should somehow become more inviting?
Yes.
Maybe. This is something we need to talk about a little bit more. What? Say it again.
We're thinking, but are we taking any action?
Right. And how would you do that? Wendy says we'd go out and grab people. Okay. What are the differences and similarities between a universalist and a Unitarian background and makeup? Do we have any Universalists in the room? I know we talked about it. I'll give you a little bit on this, and this is something worth looking at a little bit further. What we're doing is we're kind of using this opportunity of this event to skim the surface of who we are as a denomination. Now, you know us as Unitarian Universalists, and you also know that before the early 60s, we were the AUA, the American Unitarian Association, and what was the name of the Universalist denomination? Universalist in the room?
Well, I think
No, AME is a whole other church. Episcopal, yeah. Well, AME Church. AME Zion is one of those, but the AME Church. The AME Church is the African Methodist Episcopal Church. It's not a Universalist church, although there was a connection, which is that the Universalist church, some members and some prominent people in the Universalist Church did help to start, help Richard Allen start the AME Church. So that was a positive movement, I think. Universalists were, per capita, more blue-collar people. There were more blue-collar people in the Universalist Church than in the Unitarian Church. The Unitarian Church, for reasons, I'll give you an example of one reason. The first center of higher education in the United States was Harvard University. Okay? And that church was really, those schools, rather, the Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, those Ivy League schools, those first, those earliest schools or of higher education in the U.S. were really promoted by congregational churches. And Unitarianism and Universalism are congregational churches. And in fact, the congregational leaning of Harvard is Unitarian. So, although the Unitarian, I think, are sprinkled through all of those. Yes, and largely because, as we've seen recently, I saw something not too long ago, and it was right after the Charlottesville thing, and they were interviewing people on the street, and they interviewed this one man, and he says, like, well, look, you know, you're tearing down these statues, and you're taking the flag down, and this is part of our culture. That was when they were taking down the Confederate flags and the Confederate war heroes from the Civil War. And the guy said, like, you know, this is part of our culture, and you're taking this from us. And the interviewer asked the man, he says, like, did your family own slaves? He says, we didn't own slaves. He says, we were poor people. We were poor farmers. You get the message in this? The message in this is we would have if we could have, but we were poor farmers. Okay, so, yes. There were probably more Unitarian slaveholders than Universalist slaveholders, and likewise, more poor farmers there. Anyway, where we're going is probably a little less split, but I really challenge you to do a little research on this and find out, really, what are some of the differences? The fact of the matter is you can't find that by North and South. Some of the churches in the South were vehemently opposed to integrating the churches, but so were many of the Unitarian or Universalist churches in the North. The fact of the matter is that some of that in the South was because people were afraid of that. It was dangerous. It could cost you. These people who breezed into town were attacked. Jimmy Lee was actually living there. Jimmy Lee was killed because he was defending his grandmother. It was either his grandmother or his mother. He was defending her from the militia at the time. A lot of the sheriff's department deputies were just thugs that they had picked up to help, intimidate people under the circumstance. So I encourage you to take a look into this, but the rest of it is I think that there are ways in which we do that even in the bubble. And I'm going to say this right now. This is kind of a funny point. But the reason, as you look around this room, you'll see that I might be median-age person in the room. We have ways, I promise you, we have ways of making sure that we do not bring younger people into this institution. We don't do it. It's not an accident. It's something that we actively do. That's a level of discrimination that we practice. And we may not be aware of it, but I promise you, we practice it. And that's something we can talk about another time as well. We should look to ourselves, look to see how we do things, look to see how just as a priori we do these things as the people in the South and the North behaved in the early 60s and before, and to some extent to this very day. Because if we could begin to understand how we behave that way in our lives on a daily basis, right here, then we could begin to understand our adversaries, how we are, to some extent, like them as well. Okay. I'm going to let you go early this morning. Amen.